I want to begin by thanking the sponsors of tonight's shiur. To thank Menachem Mendel and Pam Weissman for dedicating the shiur to the drasha tonight in memory of Menachem Mendel's mother, Alice Weissman. Elka Bas David Zichrona Levrach, we hope then of the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah and a family in Nechama. And of course, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Sivan, Justin and Avigal Rosemore, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of their beloved son, Kobi Chaim Yaakov David Ben Yosef Tzadok, Alan and Sue Meyerowitz, and family for dedicating the Shiurim and drashos this month is Chusav Refuah Shlema for Sue, Shulam is Toba Bas Mindel, and our week of learning sponsors Adam and Allison Steinmetz, Shari and Alan Steinmetz for dedicating all of the Shiurim and drashos this week in memory of Harriet Steinmetz, Chaya Bas Meir, on the occasion of her fourth yahrzeit. We thank all of our sponsors for their incredible generosity, and with that, let us begin. So there is an incredible amount of dynamic activity that occurs in Parshas Baloscha. The menorah, some of the tribal offerings, but what I want to draw your attention to is really Pesach Sheni, but what I want to draw your attention to is really a dramatic episode which occurs towards the end of the Parsha. So the Torah, this is in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Aleph. The Torah says as follows, a very enigmatic episode. Vatidaber Miriam va'Aaron b'Moshe, alodos ha'isha kushis asher lakach, ki isha kushis lakach. Literal translation is Miriam and Aaron spoke about Moshe regarding the Isha Kushis. Isha Kushis literally means the woman from Kush. Kush, again, which often translated as Ethiopia, some foreign country. So Miriam and Aaron are speaking about Moshe regarding the Isha Kushis Asher Lakach, the woman from Kush whom Moshe Rabbeinu married. For he married a woman from Cush. An incredibly enigmatic episode. And although the Torah Kedosha goes on a little bit later on, and again, the Torah, just to tell you the substance of the discussion, so that's Perikid Beis Pasuk Aleph, chapter 12, verse 1, the substance of the discussion continues forward. In Pasuk Beis, Vayomur Harak Ach B'Moshe Diber Hashem, Halo Gam Banu Diber Vayishma Hashem. So Miriam says to Moshe, or they said to each other, did God only speak to Moshe? After all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to both of us, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to all of us, and God heard their conversation. So we are familiar with the rest of the story. The rest of the story, of course, has Moshe Rabbi, has Aaron, and really Miriam and Aaron, both being stricken with tzaras. In fact, again, I should say, the discussion as to whether or not it was just Miriam who got tzaras, or Miriam and Aaron who got tzaras, which actually today's daf. Incredibly, today's daf and daf Yomi, we had this discussion. Machlokes Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Huda ben Basira and Rabbi Akiva. Was Aaron stricken along with Miriam, or was it just Miriam? Okay, so leaving that aside, so this is a story that we're familiar with. Aaron and Miriam are speaking. Miriam speaks to Aaron about Moshe. What is she speaking about? We're not exactly sure, but we know that it has to do with Moshe Rabbeinu's wife. So they're speaking about the Isha Kushis. Moshe Rabbeinu was only married to one woman, Tzipora. So they were speaking something about Tzipora. And the content of the conversation is Miriam saying to Aaron, Aaron agreeing with Miriam, did God only speak with Moshe Rabbeinu? Of course not. He spoke with us as well. So an incredibly enigmatic episode. Again, so we know the rest. God intervenes. God gets upset. Miriam is stricken with tzaras. The question is, what is happening over here? What? First of all, on just a very basic level, what is it exactly that is occurring? What are Miriam and Aaron doing? That's number one. And number two, what is it that causes God to intervene? And number three, what's the nature of Miriam and/Aaron's punishment? So the Medrash says something amazing. I'll quote to you the Medrash. The Medrash writes, Kevan Shinisman Azakim. So remember again, there's an important juxtaposition. The juxtaposition is the episode immediately preceding this is where Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Ribbono Shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, I can't do it anymore. Or I should say differently, I can't do it alone anymore. You know, every person has their breaking point. We all are very strong. We have broad shoulders. We have the ability to shoulder a lot, much more than we ever imagined we could. But sometimes it comes to a point where you say, I can't do it anymore. Moshe Rabbeinu has that moment in this week's parasha. He has that moment where he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I can't do this myself. It's impossible. I'm like the mother always carrying around the nursing child, constantly attending to the needs of the people. I can't do it myself. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, that is a legitimate statement. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? The Ribbono Shel Olam causes his spirit to rest upon 70 elders. Shivim Zakenim, 70 elders. And those 70 elders then become the right-hand men of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu need not handle the affairs of the nation by himself, but now he has 70 assistants, 70 people to help him carry the load of the nation. So writes the Medrash, Kevan shenismanu hazakimim hidliku kol Yisrael neros, va'asu simcha, bishvil sha'alu shivim zakenim l'srara. So it's incredible. So Klal Yisrael saw this amazing thing. First of all, they were so happy that Moshe Rabbeinu got help. So happy. Moshe Rabbeinu now has assistance. And the Medrash actually says they lit candles. They lit candles as a form of celebration. They were so happy that finally Moshe Rabbeinu would have assistance. Finally, Moshe Rabbeinu again would have the aid of other great men in managing the affairs of the nation. And so they make like a shtickel yomtiv. Right? They make a little yomtiv. And what do? They go out and they light candles and they're celebrating. Everything's beautiful. Watch this. Kevan shiras and Miriam Haneros, Amra Ashrei Elu v'Ashrei Nishosehen. When Miriam saw the candles, she said, wow, praiseworthy are these individuals who were just appointed to these positions of authority and positions of leadership. And praiseworthy are their wives. Right? To be married to a man who assumes the mantle of leadership, to be married to a man who ultimately is going to work side by side with Moshe Rabbeinu, to be married to a man who's going to spend his days and his nights occupied with the needs of Klal Yisrael, what a schus, what a privilege to be married to such an individual. Amru la Tzipora. Tzipora hears Miriam talking, and Tzipora, Moshe's wife, says, Al tomri ashri nishosehen. Don't be so quick to say praiseworthy are their wives. Rather, I say, Ella oy linishosehen. Woe to their wives. Tzipora says, I feel bad. I feel bad for the wives of these men. Why? Shemiyom shediber HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Achicha. Because Tzipora now spills it. She says, you know, Miriam, from the day that God began to speak with Moshe, your brother, lo nizdakikli. We no longer have a normal marital life. Moshe Rabbeinu moved out, and the Torah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu pitched his tent outside of the camp. Moshe Rabbeinu lived alone. So here Miriam is such a yomtiv. Everybody's celebrating. 70 new elders, 70 new prophets, 70 more people to help lead the growing Klal Yisrael. Miriam again in a moment of incredible jubilation. Praiseworthy are these individuals for their newfound position, and praiseworthy are their wives to be married to such a man. While the schus, to which Tzipora shakes her head and says, Oy l'nishosehen. How bad I feel for those women. Because if their plight is going to be anything like mine, from the day that my husband began talking to God, that's the day that he's removed himself from our family. The day that he's removed himself from our marriage. And the day that quite literally, he's removed himself from our home. There's another version of this Medrash. And in the second version, the Medrash says as follows. Be'ez shahayu osam shivim misnavim. So what happened? So now the second version is a little bit different. Remember, the Spirit of God rests upon these 70 men, and they begin to prophesize. And as they're prophesizing, people would say, Ashrei imo seyem shal elu sheros b'neim nevim. Praiseworthy are the mothers of these men, that the mother gets to see her son be a prophet. Okay, I know, maybe she'd rather see her son be a doctor or be a lawyer, right? But if you can't be a doctor, you can't be a lawyer, at least you can be a prophet. Okay, no. So praiseworthy are the mothers that ultimately, again, they get to see their sons be prophets. So what happens? I'm sorry. Actually, Moshe Rabbeinu, Haisa Shan Tzipora, Tzipora hears everything that's going on. V'eschina ona lahem, and she said, Ashrei imoseyem. Their mothers should have much nachas. Praiseworthy are their mothers. Aval oyle nishoseyem. But how badly I feel for the wives of these men. V'haisa sham Miriam. So Miriam hears this, and Miriam shocked. How can you say such a thing like this? Right? What does this even mean? Why would you even talk like this? V'lama atomeres kacha. Why do you talk like this, Tzipora? Amr la Tzipora lefi shekiba Moshe achicha satora. V'niskak ledibor pirish mimeni. So what happens to Tzipora? I'll tell you why. Because from the day that Moshe Rabbeinu became the right-hand man of God, he received the Torah, began to speak with God, he separated from me. Miad, Miriam higida le'aron. Immediately, Miriam told Aaron what happened. V'ischilu ledaber shnehem b'Moshe. And they both began to speak about Moshe. And again, obviously, their speech about Moshe, they're talking about Moshe, was deemed derogatory, right? Was deemed negative, and as such, they are punished. So the common denominator amongst these two midrashim is as follows. Here's what's happening. 70 new men are inducted into the service of the people, into the service of the klal. 70 new men are inducted into the ranks of prophecy. 70 new men are inducted into the ranks of leadership. The nation is celebrating. Miriam is celebrating. And in the midst of the celebration, Tzipora, seemingly, it's almost like something slips out. She says, "Oh, I'm so happy for their mothers, and I'm so happy for the klal. But do you know who I feel bad for? I really feel tragically sad for their wives. Because if their lives are going to be anything like my husband's life, then just like when God started speaking to my husband, he separated from me, so too they are going to separate from their wives as well." So Miriam hears this. You understand? So Miriam hears this. And Miriam decides that she needs to take this to her brother. She needs to take this to Aaron. Now, let's be clear about something. Everyone involved in this story is righteous. Everyone involved in the story is a tzaddik or a tzaddikes. So to think that Miriam just brings this to Aaron for the sake of slandering Moshe Rabbeinu, for the sake of speaking negatively, that cannot be true. That cannot be true. These are great people, but yet something happened here that compelled Miriam to go ahead and share this with Aaron. Now you have to understand something. What's fascinating about this story is Tzipora had apparently been very tight-lipped about her difficulty and about her marital sadness for a very long time. She had never said anything about this. Remember, this was going on for a while already. She never said anything. But you know, sometimes when you carry around the peckle, you know, sometimes when you carry around the load on your shoulders, sometimes something happens and you lower your guard and you let something slip. So it almost seems that in the midst of this incredible celebration for the new inductees into the ranks of prophecy, that Tzipora's heart breaks and like the contents spill out. And it just happens to be that her sister-in-law is standing right there and her sister-in-law hears everything. But again, Miriam, hearing this, decides, interestingly enough, not to confront Moshe. She doesn't, which we'll get to, but she shares with Aaron. So the question is, how do we understand Miriam's behavior? So I think to appreciate what's happening over here with Miriam, we have to take a step back and try to analyze and look at who was Miriam Hanavia. So I want to point out to you two dramatic stories about Miriam. The first is the Gemara Maseches Sota. So the Chumash in Parsha Shmos says, Vayelech Eish mi Beis Levi, Vayikach es Bas Levi lo liisha, a man from the house of Levi went and took a daughter of Levi to himself as a wife. So the Gemara understands that who is this a reference to? This is a reference to Amram and Yocheved. Amram went and married Yocheved. Remember, Amram and Yocheved, the parents of Aaron, Miriam, and Moshe. So Amram came and took Miriam as a wife. So says the Gemara, Lehechon halach. I don't say, what do you mean Amram went? Where did he go? Or is what he was here the whole time? What do you mean he came, went and he took her? Amram Yehudam Arazimina. Shahalach ba'atzas bito. It means he went to marry his wife with the counsel of his daughter. Let's get this straight. Well, what was that? He went to marry his wife because his daughter encouraged him to marry his wife. What's happening here? Here we go. Tana the Gemara says, Amram gadol hadar haya. Amram was the leader of his generation. Kevan shegazer para harasha kalabin hayilod hayorot hashlichu. And when Paro was decreed, when Paro decreed and he said, every Jewish baby boy who was born should be thrown into the Nile, Amram l'shavanu amelim. Amram said, what's the point? What's the point? Why should we go ahead and keep having children? Why should we go ahead and keep building families if at the end of the day, Paro is just going to take our babies and mamish throw them into the Nile? Amad v'gireish es ishto. So what did Amram do? He divorced his wife. Amram and Chevra were already married. They were already married. Remember again, Aaron was born already. Miriam was born already. After the birth of Miriam, Paro introduces his decree, Kol habein hayilot hayo'oro tashlichu, throw the baby boys into the Nile. And Amram says, why should we toil for nothing? And he gets up and he divorces his wife. He divorces Yocheved, not because he doesn't love her, not because he doesn't care for her, not because they no longer see eye to eye in certain life issues. He divorces her because what's the point? Why should we go ahead and build a family if Paro is just going to deconstruct and destroy it? So watch this. Now when Amram did this, Amram was the leader of his generation. Amdu kulan v'gershu es nishoseyen. Everyone else got up and divorced their wives as well. So when this happened, when everyone followed suit, Amram set the tone and everyone followed suit. Amrlo, Bito. Miriam comes to her father. Now Miriam is a little girl. Her parents have just divorced. She comes to her father and she says, Abba, kasha gzeirascha yoser mishal paro. Your decree is even worse than Paro's decree. She paro lo gozer ela ala scharim. Paro at least only decreed on the girls. On the boys. V'ata gazarta ala scharim ve'ala nekevas. But you, father, your decree has devolved upon the boys and the girls, the man, male and the female. So the Pashat Pshat, the simple reading of the Gemara, is Yocheved was telling your father, listen, I hear, I understand what you did. You don't want to build a family for nothing. But look what you've done. Paro's decree itself is only on the boys. The girls could live, right? The girls are fine. But yet you, father, through quote-unquote your decree, through leaving my mother, through divorcing my mother and abandoning and breaking apart our family, your decree is even worse than Paro's. For Paro was only Gozer, Paro only decreed on the boys, on the males. Your decree, in essence, meaning your separation from my mother, makes a decree on the male and the female, the Zecharim and the Nekevus. So again, so I think there's a deeper meaning in this. That perhaps when Yocheved says that, father, your decree is on the males and the females, the Zecharim and the Nekevus, perhaps the Nekevus, you see, we often assume who are the Nekevus, who are the females being referred to over here? The female children. The female children. But perhaps, or female offspring, future offspring. But perhaps what Miriam was also saying to Yocheved, what Miriam was saying to Amram was, your decree is not only on the boys, your decree is on the females, and not just the future offspring that you may have, but your decree, think about what your decree does to my mother. What did you do to your wife? What did you do to Yocheved? Paro's decree, at least, is only on the baby boys. But your decree is on the baby boys and on the girls. But not just the baby girls who will be born. What about the wives? What about the women? Miriam, a young girl, comes and tells her father, father, I love you. I respect you. I understand what you did. But do you understand the impact your actions has had on the women? Remember, like the Gemara says, when Amram divorced his wife, he was the Gadol Ador. He was the leader of the generation. What he did, everyone else followed suit. So now, father, you're going to divorce your wife because you think that's the right approach. And everyone else follows suit. What about all the women? Okay, I understand why you did. But Paro just goes on the males. Your gezeirah, your decree, your action has an impact on the baby boys, the baby girls, and the rest of the Nekevus, the rest of the women as well. Miriam was coming from an incredible place of empathy. She wasn't simply advocating for the resumption of marital life in order to go ahead and build families and have children. She said, father, do you understand the impact of your actions on our mother? Do you understand what Yocheved is happening? What's happening with her now? Do you understand how forlorn and how forsaken and how alone she must be? In order, Soloveitchik points this out in his essays on marriage. He says something amazing. He says there are two dynamics or two aspects to marriage. There's, of course, the notion of procreation, that a person gets married in order to establish a family, that a person gets married in order to have children. But the Rav says there's another dynamic in marriage as well, which is the dynamic of companionship. companionship. Just that two human beings shouldn't be alone. That people should have each other. And that's why the Rav says, even if for some reason a marital union does not result in children, the marriage itself has meaning. The marriage itself has depth and profundity because the marriage provides a profound sense of togetherness and companionship. So Miriam comes along and she tells her father, "Father, your decree is cruel. Because it's not just on the children. It's on the rest of the Nekevas, on the rest of the females, on the rest of the women as well. What did you do to your wife? How did you leave her alone, all forsaken?" There's another episode. The Torah says again, a little bit later, remember, so Amram listens to his wife, that's the end of the Gemara. Amram listens to his daughter, comes back, remarries Yocheved, and they have a son. That son, a little boy, come to be known as Moshe. Moshe. So the Gemara says, what happens? Moshe, Rabbeinu the Torah tells us, was born 3 months early, and they hide him in the house for 3 months. So the Torah says, "V'lo yachla ot hitzpino v'tikach lo tevas gomer v'tachmura b'chim v'zef v'tasim kos kala yele v'tasim v'suvas hasiyo." So what happens? Yocheved makes a basket. She fills it again with reeds, with tar, with pitch, and she sets the baby afloat on the Nile. V'asei sotzav achosome rachok l'de'o ma ye'ase lo. And who follows by the basket? None other than Miriam. None other than Miriam. So Miriam follows the basket the entire time down the river until, of course, we know the story of the miraculous events where ultimately Bas Paradora Paro finds the basket and ultimately raises Moshe Rabbeinu baby Moshe, as her son. So I always found it interesting that why is it that Miriam was the only one who followed the basket? Right? Think about it just a moment. Why didn't Yocheved follow the basket? After all, again, this is her child. Why didn't Amram follow the basket? So my dear friends, Bepashas, one would have to imagine that the Nile was clogged with baskets. You think Amram and Yocheved, they were the only ones with this idea to save their baby by setting him afloat? Maybe someone else will find him? I'm sure the Nile River was clogged with these types of baskets. And what would happen? What would be the Seder? Parents, brokenhearted, would put their baby in the basket, set the basket afloat in the Nile, and who could bear to watch that? Right? Who could even bear to stand there as you see your child floating away? So most times what would probably happen? The parent would put their baby afloat or allow their baby to put their baby afloat on the Nile, and then what? Go home. Because who could watch such a thing? You know how it's going to end. You know how it's going to end. It's not going to end well. So who could watch this? But amazingly enough, the Baal Shem Tov writes something incredible. He says, Miriam did not want to leave her brother alone. You see, Miriam did not have any great expectations for a miracle. Miriam did not think per se that something dramatic was going to occur. Miriam did not necessarily believe that the plight of or the fate of her baby brother would be all that different than probably thousands of Jewish baby boys who met their end in the Nile River. So why does she follow along? Writes the Baal Shem Tov so beautifully, so that baby Moshe shouldn't be alone. He shouldn't be alone. That whatever was going to happen, and however it was going to happen, he shouldn't be alone. That he should know that his big sister is there in the reeds, watching over him, looking out for him, metaphorically holding his hand until he draws his last breath. Because that's what everyone expected. You'll say, but the baby didn't know. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't aware. It didn't make a difference. Miriam, being this incredible reservoir of empathy and compassion, could not bear the thought of her brother being alone in his final moments. So you see, my friends, when you take these two episodes together, it paints an incredible picture of Miriam Hanavia, of not just as a righteous woman, not just as a good woman, but ultimately, again, as a woman in possession of such incredible empathy. She comes to her father, "Father, what about our mother? You forgot about our mother. What about the Nekevas?" Amram and Yocheved go home after setting the baby afloat on the Nile. Miriam says, "How can I leave my brother alone? He's a baby. He's in a basket. He's not going to know what's going on. It doesn't matter. I know what's happening. And how could I allow him to be alone if somehow, some way, I can make him feel just a little bit more secure, even though he's in the river and I'm on the side by the reeds? I have an obligation to extend a hand of empathy, a heart of empathy, to someone else. Now bring it back to this week's parasha. So when Miriam hears what's happening with Yocheved, she can't believe her ears. When Miriam hears what's happening with Yocheved, when she hears that here everybody's celebrating because of these 70 new men who joined the ranks of the prophets, and they're lighting candles, and they're praising the mothers and the wives and everything, and Yocheved lets out a krecht, she lets out a sigh, because she feels so forsaken, so alone, because she feels, not that Moshe Rabbeinu up and left, she understands that he has a calling, she understands he's talking to God, but she feels so tzibrachen, she feels so broken, she feels so alone. And Miriam hears this. Miriam, the woman of empathy. Miriam, the woman of compassion. And now her sister-in-law has just told her a secret that no one has known. Tzipora's been tight-lipped, stoic, brave, putting on a good face. But in that moment of weakness, the emotional dam breaks and all of the pain spills out. And Miriam is there. Miriam is caught in the tidal wave of Tzipora's pain. And she goes to Aaron, and she says to Aaron, what are we going to do about this? What? You have to understand, Miriam wasn't coming to Aaron to slander Moshe. Miriam wasn't coming to Aaron to speak negatively about her brother. Miriam knew who her brother was. She knew how great he was. She knew how special he was. She wasn't coming to malign him or to actively speak negative Lashon Hara about him. She was coming to Aaron because she now was brokenhearted. The same way that she was brokenhearted when her father divorced her mother. You left my mother behind. The same way that she was brokenhearted when her parents set her baby brother afloat on the Nile. How could I leave my brother alone? Now my sister-in-law is alone. She's alone in this world. She's technically married to Moshe, but there's no marriage. There's no family life. There's no normative relationship. And so Miriam, the queen of empathy, comes to her brother Aaron and says, what are we going to do? In fact, that's the Lashon. The Lashon of the Gemara says, Vayomru, harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem, halo gam banu diber. So remember again, Miriam says, Aaron, do you know what Tzipora told me? Tzipora told me that from the day that God started speaking to Moshe, so he no longer lives with his wife. And Tzipora's opinion is that if you speak to God, you can't carry on a normal life. But Aaron, God speaks to you. God speaks to me. God speaks to both of us. And yet at the end of the day, we lead normal married lives. We're there with our spouses. We're there raising our mishpacha. So Miriam doesn't come to malign. Miriam doesn't come to detract, and Miriam doesn't come to slander. Miriam, the queen of empathy, comes to her big brother with a broken heart, saying, what are we going to do regarding our little brother? Moshe is the little brother. What do we do regarding the little brother? Something's not right here. This doesn't make sense. This is not the lifestyle of a prophet. We're also prophets. Yet we maintain some semblance of normalcy. So what are we going to do? But then something amazing happens. So the pasuk, or what happens? What does the next pasuk say? So now I'm reading to you. This is in Perek Yud Beis. Now pasuk Gimel. The very next pasuk says, Va'ish Moshe anav mikala adam. Moshe Rabbeinu was more humble than any other man. Asher al pnei ha'adama, who was on the face of the earth. Okay. Just after this, just so you follow the flow of the story. After this, Aaron turns away and Miriam is as white as snow. Miriam has been afflicted by tzaraas. So now I understand the story. I understand what happened now. I understand Tzipora's pain, Miriam making Tzipora's pain her pain, because Miriam is the queen of empathy, as you saw by Amram, as you saw by baby Moshe, comes to big brother Aaron to talk it out. God doesn't like the way that they're talking, sees it as slanderous and negative, and therefore afflicts Miriam with tzaraas. But why do you need that phrase that Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble man? Va'ish Moshe anav mikala adam. No one was more humble than Moshe Rabbeinu on the face of the entire earth. What does that have to do with anything? Why is that phrase here? So, interesting enough, as an aside, the Medrash writes, the reason it's here, and this is actually incredible, Moshe Rabbeinu overheard the conversation between Miriam and Aaron, the Medrash writes. But yet he chose not to say anything. Moshe Rabbeinu could have defended himself. Well, first of all, what he could have said is, the best answer, which is, mind your own business. Right? Mind your business. Stay out of my marriage. You know, this is between me and Tzipporah, or me, Tzipporah, and God. It doesn't concern you. Or at least, again, if he wasn't going to say, mind your own business, because Moshe would have tried too nice to say that, he could have said, you know what? There's more to the story. I did this because God commanded me to do this. Or actually, as you saw in the Gemara, I did this because I thought it's the right move, and God agreed with me. God agreed with me. But yet, says the Medrash, Moshe hears this, and he says, you know what? I'm not going to say anything. And the Torah says, when you hear that type of maligning and negativity, and you don't say anything, you don't respond, but perhaps there's a different idea. What is anava? What does it mean to be humble? So your humility is one of those very interesting things, because many times people think that humility means, I think that I'm a nothing. That's humility. I think that I'm a nothing. So we've spoken on this many times. When a person thinks that they're a nothing, that's not humility. That's a lack of self-esteem. That's a lack of a sense of self. That's an unhealthy place to be when you think that you're a nothing. So what is modesty? Humility, right? Ultimately, again, what is anava? So Moshe Chaim Litzato, the Ramchal, writes about this two times in Mesilas Yesharim. In chapter 11, Perek Yud Aleph, and in chapter Chav Beis, chapter 22. In Perek Yud Aleph, he says as follows. You know, sometimes if you want to know the definition of something, sometimes it's easier just to go ahead and see what is the opposite of it. So, you know, again, when it comes to anava, humility, the opposite of humility is gaiva, arrogance. So what's arrogance? If I could get a definition for arrogance, then I'll get a definition ultimately again for humility. So the Gemara says, what's gaiva? Sha'adam machshiv atzmo bi atzmo. Arrogance is, the world revolves around me. I am the most important thing in this world. Everything is about me. That's gaiva. Other people have to serve me. Other people have to cater to me. Other people have to yield to me. That's gaiva. An unhealthy, inflated ego, a sense of egocentricity, that's gaiva. Okay, so watch this. So what's anava? So what's humility? So in Perek Chaf Beis, listen to what Ramchal writes. Hine klal ha'anava hayosa adam bilvshi machshov atzmo mishum tam shiya. So what's anava? So anava, it would seem to be that what? Humility would be when you don't think of yourself as the center of the universe. You think of yourself as a cog in the wheel. I am a piece of the universal puzzle. I am a piece, ultimately, again, of the worldly tapestry. The world doesn't revolve around me. I am a piece of everything. But to take this one step further, perhaps what humility really means is humility is a state of being when you recognize that you have a higher mission and a higher calling in life. You see, if arrogance means I live life and I am the center of the universe, everything is about me. And everything is about making me happy, me comfortable, everything is about me. I'm the center of the universe. Anava, humility is, I recognize that life is not about me. I recognize that at the end of the day, my life, I am here. Why? Because I have a mission to fulfill. I've been given a mission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's my job to figure out how to go ahead and fulfill that mission to the best of my ability. See, here these two opposites. Gaiva is, life is all about me. Anava, humility is, life is all about my mission. Life is all about my mission. I'm here in this world to accomplish something, or maybe some things, could be multiple things. Anava means I recognize that my life is not about making myself comfortable, making myself happy. It's not about me, but it's about my mission. I'm here to accomplish something. I'm here to do something. And how do I get that done? But something amazing happens. You see, when you lead a life of anava, a life of humility, and you recognize that you are here to fulfill a mission, to carry out the sacred mission in this world, then you recognize that the ability to carry out your life mission requires sacrifices. Now, the truth is, sacrifice very often in our vernacular is a bad word. I don't want to have to sacrifice anything. In other words, I want to have my cake, eat it too, and that, and I also want to have more cake left over. So I don't want to sacrifice anything. But my friends, we know that humility requires sacrifice. Because again, in a very logical way, if we're defining humility as life is not about me, but life is about my mission, then the question becomes, what are the things that I have to sacrifice because they prevent me from fulfilling my mission? What are the things I have to sacrifice? What are the things I have to give up because they stand in the way of me accomplishing my mission? Greatness requires sacrifice. Humility requires sacrifice. And the greater the greatness, the greater the sacrifice. And that, in fact, is what the Torah HaKadosh is telling us over here. You see, so now you understand the entire progression of the story. Miriam, the queen of empathy, hears her broken-hearted sister-in-law, right? The same Miriam who advocated for her mother, the same Miriam who advocated for her baby brother, now comes to Aaron to advocate on behalf of Tzipora. It's not right what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. We're all prophets, yet we all maintain normal life. So what does the Torah say? Tzipora, you're wrong. Tzipora, there are things you don't understand. Va'ish Moshe anav mikol adam. What does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu was more humble? Why is Torah talking about his humility here? Torah is saying humility means I'm not focused on me. I'm focused on the mission. I'm here to accomplish something. That's humility. And if I'm truly humble and I'm truly dedicated to my mission, then I'm ready and willing to sacrifice anything that stands in the way of the mission. And my difference, do you know what the dramatic part of Moshe Rabbeinu's life? Do you know what, quote unquote, stood in the way of his mission? I know this is going to sound crazy. His family. His family. Now again, I want to be clear. This is uniquely Moshe. This is uniquely Moshe. This is not for anyone else. For the simple reason Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was different than anyone else. Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship was different than anyone else. Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to God, peh o peh, mouth to mouth. Right, as a regular dialogue, Moshe Rabbeinu has the ability to initiate dialogue with God. Moshe Rabbeinu was unique. Moshe Rabbeinu was an anav, he was humble, because his entire life was about the mission. But when your life is about the mission, you must be ready to sacrifice anything which holds you back. To which the Torah essentially says to Miriam, you think you know your brother, but you don't. Because Miriam, if you're going to say, well, we're all prophets, then no. You don't understand who your brother is or what your brother is. The Torah is not simply extolling Moshe Rabbeinu's virtue of humility. But the Torah ultimately, again, is telling us that in life you have to make a choice. Is it about me or is it about the mission? If it's about me, do whatever makes me happy. If it's about the mission, then I must recognize that there are things I have to sacrifice. Because there are things in my life and things in my personality and dimensions of my lifestyle that preclude me or hold me back or delay me from accomplishing my mission. And when a person is truly humble, when a person is truly mission-oriented, they find the strength to sacrifice and to let go of the things which are holding them back. This is the message that the Torah HaKadosh is telling us on two levels. So first, I want to be clear. The Torah teaches us this story because remember, embedded in this story is an incredible lesson of empathy. The Torah wants us to emulate, whereas the Torah tells us about the danger of Lashon Hara and the tragic circumstances of Lashon Hara. That's absolutely true. But in the same breath, the Torah HaKadosh is talking to us about the power of empathy. You know, the ability to feel the pain of another person is so dramatic. And the ability to make the pain of another person your own pain is so dramatic. And the ability to make the pain of another person your own pain and to want to do something about it. Remember, again, a lot of people are empathic. They have empathy. But it remains empathy. It never translates into action. The greatness of Miriam was that in those empathic moments, she translated emotion into energy. She feels her mother's pain, so she goes to lobby her father. She feels the loneliness of 3-month-old baby Moshe, so she follows in the reeds. She is brokenhearted by the brokenheartedness of her sister-in-law, and so she goes to Aaron not to slander, but to strategize. Empathy is beautiful, but Jewish empathy is when you feel, and those intense feelings lead to movement, to dynamic activity. Our job is not simply to be empathic. Our job is to be empathic, to possess a profound, deep reservoir of empathy, but to allow that empathy to propel me, to fix what is broken. You know, sometimes you see someone who's in pain, or you see a broken situation, and what do? More often than not, a person lets out a krechts, they let out a sigh, so sad, so terrible, and then what? What's for dinner? What's for dinner? Meaning, we have very short attention spans, right? I'm sad, it's terrible, good, what's for dinner? Let's move on to the next thing. That's not Jewish empathy. Jewish empathy is Miriam empathy. And Miriam empathy ultimately, again, is when I feel the pain and feel propelled to do something to try to address it. That's lesson number one. Be an empathic person, but don't allow your empathy to reside in your heart. Make sure that your empathy bleeds out into your hands, into your body, to propel you to do something to fix that which is broken. And lesson number two, each of us has to make a decision in life. Is life about me, or is life about the mission? And a lot of people choose me. A lot of people choose me. I don't mean like choose me. I mean like a lot of people choose the me approach in life. A lot of people say, you know, life is about me. It's about my happiness, my comfort, my proper disposition. It's all about me. Moshe Rabbeinu was a person who taught us how to choose mission over me. Mission over me. The goal in life is to recognize that we are here for a purpose. Each of us has a tachlis. Each of us has a mission. But we also have to understand that there are things in life that hold me back from accomplishing that mission. And the question becomes, if I'm able to discover what the mission is, am I courageous enough to sacrifice the things that are holding me back in an effort to advance my life, advance myself, and actualize my mission? Moshe Rabbeinu received a lot of flack because of the lifestyle he lived on many different levels. But Ish Moshe Anav Me'od Mikal Adam. Moshe Rabbeinu was humble. And humility means the ability to choose mission over me. The ability to recognize that I'm here for a purpose. I have what to accomplish. And anything that gets in my way, I have to clear aside. Now for Moshe Rabbeinu, that was as dramatic as his wife and his children. And I know, it sounds crazy. It sounds crazy, and that's why it's not for us. It's for Moshe Rabbeinu. But the lesson is for us. My dear friends, it's important, you know, the world, or I should say the world, Maryland, right? We're really beginning to open up a lot, right? And our community is beginning to open up a lot. And, you know, I'll tell you, just on a personal level, I kind of find a little bit like mixed emotions. On one hand, there's been an incredible zuchus in the being cocooned. Because I think we've had a lot of time to do a lot of thinking. You know, and just in general, to look at the world differently, to look at ourselves differently. And now, my greatest fear is we open up, and answer which we will on every level, and life goes back to normal. But I'll tell you, for one, I don't want life to go back to normal. Because, I mean, I want life to go back to normal on many of the external ways. But I don't want to go back to who I was 3 months ago. Because I learned things. I understand things. I see myself and I see my life through a different lens. And I don't want to go back to the business as usual lens. And one of the most dramatic things that I feel like I'm taking from this whole episode is the notion of mission. You know, life could change so dramatically, so quickly, as we have seen it. And I'm sure there are still more changes to come. Because life could change so quickly, you have to think to yourself, why are you here? To think about, what's my mission? What is my mission in life? Ma chovasi ba'olami, right? Or ma chovasi ba'olami, what is my obligation in this world, as the Ramchal writes? What is the mission? And my dear friends, Some of us never even ask the question. Those of us who ask the question just keep asking it. But the goal is you have to answer it. And maybe you'll get the right answer, maybe you won't. But you at least have to try to answer it. What is my mission in this world? Answer it. Write it down. This is my mission. My mission is to fill in the blank. It's not a paragraph, by the way. It's not an essay. It's not, you know, 5 pages double-spaced. You know, it's a line. My mission in this world is to. And by the way, it could be my mission in this world for this week. Because sometimes, again, our missions change and evolve over time. It could be my mission for this year. Choose your mission. Choose your mission. Choose your mission over me. Choose the mission. Choose the humility over the arrogance. But my dear friends, after you choose the mission, the next step is of vital and critical importance. The next step is, what are the things that hold me back from accomplishing the mission? And there are many things which hold us back. For some of us, it's toxic relationships. For some of us, it's negative exposures. For some of us, it's putting ourselves just in the wrong places, in the wrong times. For some of us, it's bad or defective character traits. Are you willing to sacrifice the things which hold you back in order to accomplish your mission? Moshe Rabbeinu answered that question in the affirmative. And Moshe Rabbeinu therefore made the most dramatic sacrifices humanly possible because he chose mission over me. We are not asked to make the sacrifices of Moshe, but we are asked to make the smaller sacrifices in our everyday lives to ensure that we are able to actualize our mission. So may we be zoche mirtz Hashem to learn from the empathy of Miriam and feel, not just feel empathy, but act with empathy. May we be zoche mirtz Hashem to gain and to internalize the anava, the humility of Moshe, to choose mission over me, to identify the things that will help me actualize my mission and keep doing them, but more importantly, to identify the things that are holding me back and to find the courage to let go and to sacrifice them. We'll stop over here for this evening. I take the opportunity to wish all of you a good Erev Shabbos, a beautiful Shabbos Kodesh, a great Sichus Torah with all of you, and Mirat Hashem Yizocha to continue next week. Have a wonderful evening, and thank you again for joining us. Good night, everyone.